This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Back and feeling like a failure. You know, I think about all the things I didn't do, all the things I couldn't accomplish, all the things on my list which didn't happen. We want to give you a different way to look at New Year's, a way that's much more productive and much more God-honoring.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the interesting questions, I was just reading this online, some people were asking, actually, on Billy Graham's webpage, they were asking, well, should Christians even make New Year's resolutions? You know, that's something which we traditionally do this time of year, but some people say, well, it's just a secular worldly thing. Is that something we Christians should even consider, something we should be engaged in?
Well, you know, it does kind of imply that we're in charge, that we have the ability to change our lives, that, you know, what we decide we can make happen.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
When we look at the sovereignty of God, that's not necessarily so. You know, we can decide all the things that we want to do. Man proposes, but God disposes.
Yeah, that's what one of the poets said. Well, you know, I was looking at some scripture about this, and one of the ones that Dr. Graham mentioned really early on, he said, he said, you've got to consider Lamentations 3, verse 40. It says, let us search out and examine our ways and turn back to the Lord. I mean, what more can you say as a reference for doing, you know, some sort of annual review, or actually, you know, it doesn't say at New Year's. That should be
right.
a continuous thing. You know, just like Paul says in 2 Corinthians in chapter 13. You know, he said to examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith, to test yourselves or to try yourself.
And so a time of introspection is really quite biblical.
Yeah,
to stop and think and examine ourselves. But we've got to remember that, you know, God is at work in our lives, that it's not all us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And, you know, I was – one thing, every time this discussion comes up, I think about Jonathan Edwards. Now, if you're not into American history, Jonathan Edwards was one of the early American theologians, a brilliant man, kind of a polymath. I mean, he was not only a theologian and a pastor, but he was also a natural scientist. He was a writer. He had a lot of different talents. But
he was president of Princeton University.
He was the first president of Princeton, yeah, the College of New Jersey. When it was just founded, he was selected. And it's kind of interesting. He did a very detailed list of resolutions that he renewed from time to time. It wasn't just a New Year exercise for him. But there's several places you can go online. I know John Piper's website, desiringgod.com. If you just go out on Google and search Jonathan Edwards resolutions, you'll see him. But I pulled a few of them out because I thought, you know, this is really instructive. Here's a man who was known for his theological wisdom and his practical, personal godliness. And he made resolutions. And some of these I thought were really pointed. Like number 6 in his list, resolve to live with all my might while I live. I thought that was really cool, you know, not to just drift along and waste time and, you know, be idle or ineffective, but actually to say, I want to use the time that God's given me to the best benefit.
Wow. And, you know, resolve never to do anything which I should be afraid to do if it was the last hour of my life. So we live as if we're going to see Christ in a minute because Christ is here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I had to pull a few others here. Now, I thought this was good. This is very practical and kind of funny in a way. He says, resolve never to suffer the least motions of anger to irrational beings. You know, you think about that. I mean, do we lose our temper with our dog or with our car? I mean, the dog is, you know, like a little bit rational, but the car, why would we be angry with our car? Our car, it's not the car's fault. The car is a thing.
Well, sometimes it's the dog's fault, but reason with a dog? Can you really bring the dog to repentance?
No. How about this one here? I thought this was really good. Resolved never to give over, nor in the least to slacken my fight with my corruptions, however unsuccessful I may be. You know, one of the problems that people have with making resolutions is they tend to fail. You know?
That's kind of what I'm struggling with right now.
Yeah, and some people just say, well, I've blown it. I guess that's the end of my resolution for the year. And, you know, Jonathan Edwards right there said, I will never give up the fight. Even if I fail every time I face it, I'm going to keep fighting it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good attitude to have.
Well, he kind of sums that up in this one. He said, resolve to ask myself at the end of every day, week, month, and year, wherein I could possibly in any respect have done better. Now, you know, the balance is, yeah, we should be constantly examining ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we in the faith? Have we, you know, are we in sin? Is there something we need to repent of?
Mm-hmm.
But what I struggle with is recognizing, you know, I look and I just feel like such a failure. And I wonder, okay, well, how do I keep going?
Yeah.
You know, what do I do? And you know, you addressed that in the last one, not to stop fighting.
Never.
Even when we fail again and again, to pick up and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's very valuable to look back at what's happened. And that's one of the things we do in our New Year's Day traditions.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about that in the second segment. I'm kind of curious, though, you know, one of the things that I kind of like, maybe not so much the resolutions, because that tends to be the, you know, I resolve that I am going to stop drinking soft drinks this year, or I'm going to lose weight or whatever. And then the first time we blow it, we slip, we forget, we're overcome by our weaker nature. We just say, oh, well, there goes the year again. But, you know, rather, I like the idea, instead of saying resolutions, I'm going to be better this year, rather to say, I got a goal to set for this year. I'm going to make a goal, you know, so at the end of the year, I want to achieve a certain something.
You know, that was a key thing for me with, you know, I've had gestational diabetes with each of the last pregnancies that we had.
Yeah.
And I have never been good at losing weight, never been good at sticking to a diet. Because what I would do is I'd start the day and I'd blow it at 9 a.m. or at 3 p.m. And I'd say, oh, well, that's it for today. And I'd just continue to blow it the rest of the day. And when I was expecting a baby and that diet risked my baby's life if I blew it, then if I blew it, I immediately got back on the wagon and did what I was supposed to do. And that's really what we should all do about all these things. That when we commit to do something differently, when we blow it, instead of saying, oh, well, I guess I'm just sunk, I'll just keep blowing it all day, instead to repent, ask the Lord for forgiveness and for help to do right, and turn the other way. That's what repent means.
That's right. You know, one other passage I saw this afternoon, I made a note here, Psalm 119 and verse 59, I thought about my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. You know, that doesn't say it and arrived. That doesn't say I changed and now I'm there. But rather said, I turned my feet onto a different path, and that pathway is a long distance. It's a route. I'm on the road. I'm not where I need to be or where I hope to be eventually, but I'm going in the right direction now. And I think that's an important thing. And you know, all of these are useful. Let me ask you this. Now, you talked about failing at resolutions, and that's everybody's experience, I know. Have you ever made a unique resolution? There's a lot of things that people do pretty commonly, but have you ever made a specific kind of unique to yourself resolution that you actually fulfilled, that you were able to keep up with?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I purposed many years ago, I think I was in college, that I was going to read through the Bible and I wasn't going to stop until I got through it. And, you know, I grew up in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
I'd had devotions for years.
Yeah.
But I had never purposed just to start at the beginning and read all the way through to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think I told anybody about it, but there was a reading plan. I had a study Bible, and there was a reading plan, a study Bible, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to do it. And there were days I missed, but I just started back and kept on going. I didn't let it throw me, which I usually do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't remember how long it took. It took longer than a year. But when I got to the end and got to the end of Revelations, I was so thrilled and so delighted, and I've done that ever since. Just gone, and I don't know how many times I've been through the Word of God since. But you know, that was a real blessing to get through it. You know, it felt like a huge success to me, even though it took longer than a year.
Well, that's a good one. You know, I remember I kind of set a goal for myself many years ago. I think we had just changed jobs and had moved to Louisiana, as I recall when I did this. And I thought, you know, I read a lot, but the past year or so with job stress and transitions and stuff, I realized most of the reading I had been doing was newspapers, magazines, you know, just kind of temporary throwaway stuff. And I thought, you know, I'd like to be getting more out of my reading than just the news and weather. And so I decided for that period of time, I wanted every month, I wanted to read one book that had spiritual value and one book that had some sort of professional development to it. So it might be a textbook or a manual or a guidebook of some sort. Or, you know, on the spiritual side, it could be a devotional guide or one of the classics of Christian literature, whatever. You know, I read a range of things, but that really helped because it didn't, you know, it didn't shackle me to say, I'm going to read a great book every week, but rather just to say, sometime in the course of this month, I'm going to read something useful. And I actually was able to keep up with that. And one thing I want to mention, if you'd like to do something like that, it's helpful to keep track. And at the time, I was using a paper planner, you know, a notebook. It was Franklin Planner, is one of those brand names. But later years, I found a website called Library Thing, librarything.com. It's kind of fun. It's just you basically build a bookshelf with whatever you have read or are reading, however you want to use it. But it's just basically, you know, it's a free website. You set up an account, and you just say, I'm reading this particular book, and it's got a whole database of book covers. So you could set this thing up and just have, you know, a picture of everything you're reading look like a catalog page on Amazon or something. And you can keep up to, I don't know, 150, 200 or something books in there. Do you know how many books a year you read? Have you ever kept track of it?
It'd be scary.
Yeah.
It would be terrifying to know.
Yeah. I think I've averaged about 55 to 60 a year.
Cool.
Which sounds like an awful lot, but I don't read as much as you do.
You know, it's interesting, though, when you look at that over the course of 10 years, that's over 500 books, Al.
Yeah.
That's a lot of wisdom and information, you know?
Yeah. And you know, you read for different reasons. Sometimes you read just for entertainment and relaxation to kind of disengage from the trouble of the day.
That's me.
Yeah. And that's valid. That's valid. But it's good to say, well, in addition to all the potato chips and the ham sandwiches, I'm going to eat some things mentally that are really meaty, that I'm really going to grow some spiritual muscle or some intellectual capacity going through this.
Cool.
Well, that's pretty neat. Well, I'll tell you what, we got a couple minutes here before the commercial break. Any others? Have you done any other unusual goals or resolutions over the years?
Hell, I am remarkably bad at this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have very high standards for myself,
mm-hmm.
and so I almost never meet them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have huge standards for myself, and so I feel like a failure a lot. But you know, one thing that's helped me is, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment.
Yes.
Is what we started doing, where we go over what happened in the last year, because
mm-hmm.
that got me off of I didn't meet my standard to. What was God doing in my life this year?
Yes.
And that's incredible. That changed everything for me. That changed New Year's from being a time of, oh, great, I am such a bummer. I didn't meet my standards, to, wow, look what God accomplished. And that changes everything.
Yeah. What he accomplishes in spite of us.
Yeah.
You know, in spite of our best efforts sometimes. And we see God's work in our lives. And so often it's, you know, so often things that are unexpected. I was reading in Philippians this morning, and Paul is talking about how my change, he says, the things that have happened to me have turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. And what he's writing is, you know, I've been beaten, I've been thrown in jail, I'm writing here in chains and all that. And you know what? It's good. God is doing great things through it.
And see, we have such a weak idea of the Christian life. You know, we feel like things are going wrong if, you know, we aren't driving the latest car or able to afford the latest styles. We need to look at the examples of the apostles. It changes things. You know, as we move into our station break, which is just 60 seconds, folks, so hang with us.
Yeah.
Matt Henry, our musical son, passed me a funny note.
Yep.
He said Johnny Cash had some New Year's resolutions too.
Mm-hmm.
He resolved to kiss Jane, that's his wife,
okay.
June, sorry, kiss yes. June, his wife,
uh-huh.
and don't kiss anyone else.
Okay. I'll resolve to kiss my wife and nobody else. Can I kiss my mama?
Yeah, and your daughters.
And my daughters, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, okay, well, that's great. Well, let's take 60 seconds here. We'll do a little revenue break here, and we'll be right back. You are listening to Hal and Melanie Young, Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
It's not always easy having sons. Teenage boys put away a startling amount of groceries. Younger boys can be downright destructive. They're noisy, unconcerned with hygiene, and the dog has a longer attention span, or so it seems some days. If these are God's chosen gifts to us, and we believe that they are, then why does it seem so hard? How can we prepare these boys to serve God when we can barely make it through the day? Isn't there a better way? The answer is yes. Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys by Hal and Melanie Young is a practical, award-winning guide to equipping the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. John Rosemond says, "This is just what the doctor ordered for parents who want to raise capable Christian men of character." Raising Real Men by Hal and Melanie Young. Visit it on the web at raisingrealmen.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Welcome back. This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical, and I'm Hal.
And Melanie.
And we are talking about New Year's resolutions and how to make them work and to be encouraged by them and not have the annual discouragement party.
Now, we started a tradition how many years ago, Hal? I don't even know.
I'm not sure.
I think it's well over a decade ago.
Uh-huh.
Maybe more than that.
Okay.
Anyway, we started a tradition where we would sit down together as a family, children, all of us. And first, and we started out doing this on New Year's Eve. As the children have gotten older, sometimes we do this during the day on New Year's Eve, sometimes on New Year's morning before we have our next part, which we'll tell you about. But we started sitting down and going over, talking about what the Lord did during the year that year.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that sounds pretty simple. Until you really start looking at it. Because when you really start looking at it, you find out that even in the most mediocre life, the most ordinary life, there are tremendous providences all through the year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, there's a time for this. You know, I think about Exodus, I think it's in chapter 12, when God instituted the time of Passover, you know, it says you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever, I'll do an ellipsis here, and it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service, that you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. You know, why are we celebrating this? It's a legitimate question, and God wants us to take time to remember what he has done in our lives and to keep in memory. And to pass that on to our younger generation, you know, that we adults who have some perspective can say, children, do you see what God's doing here? Do you understand this is the hand of God in our lives?
Yeah, I don't think we do that enough because we get so busy and so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
A crisis comes, we're running hysterically just trying to beat down all the fires around us, and we don't really stop and think about what God is accomplishing. And, you know, I really appreciate that you journal, Hal.
Mm-hmm.
Because your journaling has made this so much more valuable for our family.
Yeah.
Because it gives a way to look back and see what happened. And, you know, every year I am just stunned, you know, at mm-hmm. the different sicknesses our family has faced, at the breakdowns, the providences and how God has met our needs.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when you think about it, when you really sit down and examine it, it's way more amazing than we think is possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's well, we started doing this, I don't know, years ago. I know it's been, I think it's been since we moved here. So I'd say in the past 10 years or so. But, you know, every year about this time, we'll set aside a couple of hours and we'll sit down and we'll just talk through the year and just say, hey, do you remember this happened? Do you remember this other thing, or this something that we did, or something that God did unusual and unexpected in our lives? And I'm an engineer. I'm a business type of guy. And so I like to put up a whiteboard. I like to have slides on the PowerPoint, put them on the TV. And, everybody kind of says, oh, here comes Dad on the whiteboard.
Okay, folks, you do not have to do this, okay?
No. And, in fact, it could be one of those pajamas and chocolate, hot chocolate type of things. You don't have to talk about healthcare, but you can make it really informal and free form. Okay.
And you don't have to wear your pajamas either, right?
No, the footy pajamas. Dad doesn't have to wear his footies. Okay. But
Dad doesn't even have footies.
That's true. Okay.
I can't imagine that, Hal. I'm sorry. That would be way too funny.
No. Okay. Let's not go there. Let's not brain bleach. But any rate, it could be really informal. Although, I think it's kind of like my vision of unschooling. Everybody else can be very informal and free form and floating and kind of, user-directed, but somebody's got to be keeping track. And I think if you want to do it informally, somebody needs to make a few notes to make sure that you get the highlights, because it's easier to kind of drift off and not get the full. It doesn't have to be, formal business presentation, with slides and calculations and such.
Well, what do you do? You usually look through your journal.
Uh-huh.
And, I really like when you started journaling, you told me, we had just read what? Reagan in His Own Hand or something like that?
Yeah.
We'd read the Reagan Diaries.
Right.
And where he had, where we'd seen the diary that President Reagan actually wrote while he was in office.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you saying, if he can do it as the leader of the free world, I have no excuse.
Yeah. Well, something I found helpful, a friend of mine is a former pastor now, was really good, but really diligent about this. And he wrote something, put it up on his blog one time and said, every year, these are the kind of questions I ask. And I sort of adopted that model, not his exact list of questions, but I try to think through certain things that we want to cover. And I wanted to suggest a few of those. And I think I'll put these out on the website afterwards, maybe out on our blog. As you think through the year, did you reach any milestones? Like our son Matthew went off to college. That's a big milestone. He graduated from high school and he's moved off into the next stage of academic preparation for life and all the rest. That's a milestone for us. Did you have anybody who learned to read, anybody that potty trained? I mean, any milestone is worth remembering. Another one, did you make any big steps forward? One of our sons just got a big pay raise at work.
Yeah.
He's got a promotion. That's a big step forward. Did anybody get any kind of award or achievement that's worth remembering and celebrating?
One thing missing from that list is, did you endure any trials
yeah.
that God brought you through? Because, that's been a big, our friends at church call us the Job family. Folks, this is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, but we have been through so many different trials in the past few years with, you facing cancer and our littlest heart condition. And
uh-huh.
yet, when you get to the end of the year, you say, God brought us safely through that. Then that trial becomes a source of joy and happiness.
Right.
And not just fear and anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like Paul talking about, I can look back now at my chains and say, hey, this gave me an opportunity to preach to the Praetorian Guard. I mean, how cool is that? That's not what the apostle said. That's the modern interpretation. But it does kind of think, yeah, you're right. That's definitely think, what trials have you gone through? Even if you can't see the light shining through them yet, it's worth remembering, hey, we had a tough year. And, God is faithful. And we made it, and here we are,
I think this is particularly valuable for our children, and especially the younger children, because a year is such a long period of time when you're 5 or 7 or 10.
Yeah.
It's a huge percentage of your life. To me, a year seems like nothing. It just passes so quickly.
Yeah.
And yet when they're little, it seems like such a large period of time that it's hard, I think, for them to remember all the things that God has done. And when we start talking about them and bring them to everybody's remembrance, then we can praise God together as a family and talk about what he's done and how he protected us and how he provided for us. And you know, how he provided for us reminds me of something really important.
Hmm.
We started sharing our family finances with our children.
Yeah.
And that is hard to do sometimes, but it is so profitable because when your children see where you are financially, first of all, it makes them a lot more content with what they receive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they begin to see where the money goes out and where it comes in. They can help. You know, the older children may be prompted to help out,
mm-hmm.
you know, to help the family, to be more supportive about helping the family so mom and dad can work more.
Yeah.
You know, but they, I think it teaches them things that they're going to need to know for life.
Yeah. You know, my parents didn't want to burden us, I think, with financial concerns and all. But I remember as I was going off to college, my parents decided to give me an allowance, which, you know, I always had very small allowances. So when they said, we're going to give you, I think it was $100 a month just for spending, you know, for expenses and whatnot. I thought, wow, well, that's a nice chunk. But I remember my dad looking at me kind of with a sort of wry smile. He says, you know, I think you've got more spendable revenue right now than I do. And I thought, how could that possibly be? And it wasn't until I was a grown up and had a family and had expenses to be concerned about and budgets and everything, I realized, you know, just to have $100 to spend on, you know, pizza or a magazine or go to the movies or something, you know, that doesn't come easy. And it's useful to share with your kids so that they know, hey, there's a reason that we don't just go out for hamburgers every night. And it's not because your parents are health nuts or stingy or anything.
Or being curmudgeons.
Yeah.
We know my family did things a little differently. I remember being 10 or 11 and 12 and, you know, my parents asking me to help balance the business checkbook and our family checkbook. And, you know, but it was interesting to me because it did make me so much more content.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw where the money was going. I saw how much was coming in. And I understood when my mother said, yeah, we can't do it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think there's a lot to be learned. Even if you're making mistakes, that's what's hard for me to say. You know what, children? We spent too much on this year. Your parents mm-hmm. were foolish. But how powerful an example to them not to make those mistakes when they're grown up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and to give them the example of okay, even your parents that you love and respect made dumb mistakes this year, and now this is how parents and grown-ups deal with dumb mistakes.
Right.
You know, because if your parents are superheroes and they never make any errors, then when you make a mistake, you feel like a failure, and you don't know what to do about it.
You know what? I think that's the fear, Hal, that they'll find out we're not superheroes. But what's been a blessing to me is that as we have been transparent with our children.
There's a word, yes.
You know, and as we have repented in front of our children when we've made mistakes, I can't imagine our adult sons respecting us any more than they do. It would be ridiculous if they did.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they no longer see us as superheroes. It's almost like it's freed them up not to criticize us.
Yeah.
It's freed them up to honor us and respect us because they're not looking for the fakeness. You know, they're not judging our hypocrisy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, now here's one that I like to ask our guys a few days before so they can be ready and not be caught flat-footed.
Okay, so listen up, guys.
But I like to ask them a few days before we have this time, what book you read this year was the most significant, the most important, the most had the biggest impact on you? And it could be anything. It could be a hobby. It could be some spiritual reading you had done. It could be something related to schoolwork. It could be anything. But what has had the biggest impact on your thinking, your life, your spirituality, or whatever this year? And I like, you know, to kind of think through that and to sort of emphasize there should be some purpose to some of that reading other than just idling, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there was a couple other good ones here that, let's see, have you grown spiritually this year?
Yeah.
And how, you know?
If not, what are you gonna do about it?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Let's examine it. What, you know, maybe you stopped having devotions. Maybe you got mm-hmm. distracted by spending too much time on social media. You know, what happened?
That's right. You know, one I didn't quote earlier, Jonathan Edwards had one of his resolutions was to read the scriptures enough that he felt consciously growing. in his knowledge and understanding of them. He didn't say, I'm going to read a chapter a day, or I'm going to read 10 chapters a day, or I'm going to read a book a week. Or anything. He just said, I'm going to read the scriptures enough and consistently enough that I feel like I'm growing in knowledge and understanding of the Word of God. I remember I did a period there, which was a good goal too, where I said, okay, I'm not going to set myself a goal of how many verses a day or whatever. I'm just going to read until I feel that God has said something into my life today. And some days it was two or three chapters, and some days it was, you know, a paragraph when I just had to sit back and say, wow, that's enough for one day to chew over. But, you know, you can do anything. Now, we've got, go ahead.
Well, let's close out this segment, and we're just going to take a short station break with, again, Matt sent me another interesting thing. He's the music guy. Woody Guthrie shared his New Year's resolutions one year. Mm-hmm. And several of them that were in a row kind of cracked me and Matthew both up. He said, play and sing good. Number 26 is dance better. And number 27, beat fascism.
Okay, I like that. Yeah, let's beat fascism in every form and respect, okay? Well, let's take a break here. You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with
Hal and Melanie Young.
That's right. We'll see you in 60 seconds.
Jero was a slave in Egypt. It was a dangerous place to be. The work was exhausting, and her family was torn between the gods of the Egyptians and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And her brother, would his Ada be given in marriage to an Egyptian in the palace? Would they ever be free? Adventure, excitement, love, and faith come together when Jero and her family find themselves at the culmination of 400 years of history in A Cry from Egypt, the historical novel by Hope Auer, selected by David Quine's Cornerstone Curriculum and the Tapestry of Grace program, endorsed by Rob Shearer of the Schaefer Study Center. Order your copy from the website, acryfromegypt.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with
Hal Young
and Melanie Young. Hey, folks, we are talking about making a New Year's a tradition that helps you to see what God has done and to prepare yourself for the new year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last segment we talked about looking over the last year,
mm-hmm.
seeing what God's done, examining the trials you've been through, the successes you've had, and really giving God the glory for what happened during the year. The next part is what we do during the day on New Year's. And, you know, this has become a favorite thing of all of our children. Our adult sons come back for it.
Yeah.
They look forward to it. They turn down invitations based on it because they want to do it. And let's talk about what we do next.
Well, what we do next is we brainstorm. We just try to come up with ideas for what we'd like to try to accomplish in the coming year. And, you know, it could be as simple as saying, where do you want to be 12 months from now? That's some of that goal setting. But you see, we've got a family business, and it's a creative endeavor, and so we kind of depend on having lots of new ideas every year to keep us fresh, to come up with new products and new ways to serve our customers and minister to families. And so we sit around sometimes for a couple of 3 hours just to say, hey, you know, what are some ideas of things we could do in a year coming up? And it's interesting. Even the youngest ones have some really useful ideas.
That has been fascinating to me because I really, you know, I grew up in a family business, and we did this kind of thing. We talked and shared. But it's been a shock to me to see maybe our children are more engaged even than I was growing up because, you know, we homeschool, they're with us a lot more. But our children have been great at coming up with ideas for the business.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I remember one New Year's we were sitting around talking, and I think it was you, Samuel. Samuel said, you know, Mom, Dad, when you're at the booth and you're counseling with a family, you're praying with the parents, or we're talking to them about the resources, the little boys are trying to drag them away. We need something at the booth to bring boys there and to keep them there. Well, everybody started brainstorming. And, you know, one of my things was I said it's got to be quality. I don't want it coming back broken.
Right.
Don't want to have to deal with returns. You know, and they wanted to do something that would be kind of in the context of what we were doing, would promote heroism and manliness. And so they started doing research, and they found these solid wood rubber band guns
and swords,
swords
yeah.
and things. And so we do you remember we ordered just a few of them for a show we did in South Carolina for the Teach Them Diligently in South Carolina. And we ordered just a few of them, and maybe it was a different show, I don't remember, but they said,
yeah.
I was stunned. Because I was thinking, well, if we don't sell them, that's all right. You know, it was just an experiment. Well, little boys were dragging their parents to the booth.
Yeah.
And so parents who'd never heard of us were coming up and saying, oh, what is this? You have a book about raising boys? It was fascinating.
Yeah.
And when we would counsel people,
mm-hmm.
wowee.
Yeah.
Because those little boys that you say, Mommy, I'm bored. Mommy, I'm bored. They'd say, they'd stand there like little angels as long as we wanted to talk. With this expression on their face that says, I would never misuse a rubber band machine gun, ever. I'm a good boy.
Yeah, and see, that was our young guys. That was our, gosh, I think, our how old were they at that time? I think Samuel was, what, about 13?
Yeah, 12,
that was,
13.
That was, okay, I'm sounding like an old fogey. I think that was in 2011, dear. That was the second year we were out on the road. But anyway, yeah, that's the thing. In all of this, go ahead and let your youngest ones have some input, because we older folks forget just the incredible wonder of the world. And when we talk about places we've been or things we've seen, our little ones see it literally from a different angle. They're shorter than us. They see the world very differently, and sometimes they see things that we totally miss.
It's been fascinating to me to see how our youngest children, you know, how the children 4 years old and 8 years old will come up with ideas to better manage our family life or better manage our business life. You know, that has been absolutely fascinating. And also, even if the idea is not something you can use, you get a window into their heart.
Mm-hmm.
You find out what they're thinking and how they're thinking and what concerns them. And, you know, that has made me change some of my priorities. You know, when I have found out what was really important to our children, and found that sometimes when I think, maybe I thought I was doing something for them by doing this, when really they needed that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can say that I had to, I don't know if repent is too strong a word in this, but I had to change my way of thinking about some things, because the first couple of years we were out on the road, you know, we're trying to cover a certain amount of distance, and I was trying to find, well, what's an optimum distance for us to travel? And since I do most of the travel planning, you know, I was saying, well, we could do like 450 miles a day indefinitely. And the answer is, well, yes, we can. But the family came back to me during one of these sessions after a year or two and said, you know, we're going too fast. We're seeing America first as it flashes by the windows. We're not, you know, actually getting much out of this travel, is what they were trying to tell me. And I realized, you know what? Maybe I need to slow the pace down. Yes, we can go the distance when we need to, but how much better if we just plan our schedule to say, instead of going 450 miles, let's make it 350. And we can do that kind of at a lope instead of running flat out all the time. And, you know, I think this past year, even though we drove just as much, I feel like we saw more and enjoyed more along the way. Would you agree with that? I hope you agree with that. This is unrehearsed, by the way.
It is completely unrehearsed.
Yeah,
I think so. And that was very important to me and relieved my stress a lot. Because I love to see things. I love to go new places. I love to do new things. And it was stressing me out to think, oh, no, we're passing this really cool place and we may never go to this state again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that kind of feedback in your family life is something that's very valuable. And it's been, you know, some of those ideas we brainstormed as a family have not come to pass. We just never got around to it, or other things intervened. You know, we had some great ideas for some films we were thinking of doing. We've done some Christian filmmaking in the past a few years ago, and then you got cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't happen. And yet it's still valuable because, again, you learn so much about what's on everybody's minds and hearts. And sometimes those dreams that come up might not be fulfilled that year, but they might be fulfilled a year or two later or several years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember thinking how during one of these, when was that? I think it was 1996. 7.
Whoa.
Okay, so that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, you know, Hal's true gifts lie in writing, and he's not writing for a living. Hal ought to be writing for a living.
Yeah.
What can I do to encourage that? How can I help him? And it was many years before he started writing for a living.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was within about 5 years we were beginning to do writing, beginning to write for magazines and journals.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we write and speak full time.
Yeah.
But, you know, that occurred to me during a New Year's in 1997.
That's fine.
And so, yeah, go ahead and dream, brainstorm, think what you'd like to be in. Yeah, it may be impossible this year. There's nothing that says it'll be impossible in 10 years.
Well, it's kind of like that, you know, a lot of people, I think, have this goal because there's people out there promoting it, and they sometimes there's a real longing set up. I want to be working from home. I want to have my own company. You know, I want to be my own boss. And, you know, that it's really hard to make that step. And yet, you know, the time came when God opened the door for us and basically kicked us out of the airplane.
Yeah.
You know, where it, suddenly there's not much consequence to this risk any longer. You know, to say, well, I didn't have to jump off a boat that, you know, that was perfectly afloat, but rather, you know, God gave me an opportunity to try something new.
You know, I have told two different families that in just the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you have a great job and everything's going great, the risk to doing something new or to starting a business is huge. You know, you've got to give up so much. Stop it, son. You've got to give up so much. But when the Lord takes it all away, suddenly your opportunity cost goes to zero. And there's no reason why you shouldn't start a business, start a ministry, do something unusual, do something you've always dreamed. And, you know, if it fails, what have you lost? A few months of your time? But what if it succeeds? What if something new happens? And, you know, yeah, it's scary. I mean, we make less than half what we did 2 years ago, but I think we're twice as happy.
Well, I think we're helping more people directly. I think that's, you know, God called us into a different track, and so we're thankful for that. Well, I tell you what, we're going to make a shift here. Speaking of tracks, there's a segue. Wow. I want to talk a little bit about the value of keeping track as the year is going along. We're talking a lot about looking back and saying, what's happened this year? But, you know, I find if I look back at the start of the year, well, like we do an annual feature on our blog, the State of American Manhood, and we try to pick out 10 or 12 examples of, you know, good manly virtues and real crummy manly faults that were in the news during the year. And I find if I haven't kept track of it during the year, it's really a scramble because I think, what in the world happened in January? I don't remember what happened in January. That was a year ago. Well, you know what? You can run into the same thing with your family meeting if you haven't kept track during the year. So I tell you what, why don't we go ahead and we're a minute or two early. Why don't we take our third station break here and come back and we'll talk a little bit about keeping a journal. What do you think?
Oh, guilt. You're going to make me feel guilty.
I'm not going to make you feel guilty.
Okay. Right. As long as you promise not to make me feel guilty.
Not going to make you feel guilty at all.
All right, let's go then.
All right. We'll be back in 60 seconds now.
See you then, folks.
You want more. You want it to be better. Not just good, but great. That's what we all want from our marriages. Love, romance, security, respect. We want encouragement and, well, we want happiness. Is there a way to make your marriage even better? To make it holy and happy and a lot more fun? Yes, there is. The new book by Hal and Melanie Young, My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses. It's a practical, biblical look at what your marriage can and should be, and it gives you working ways to make your mate your best friend without swapping around. Available December 2013 from MyBelovedAndMyFriend.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Well, welcome back. This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal.
And Melanie.
And we have been talking about New Year's resolutions and New Year's annual reviews for your family and times to look back and see what God's done in your life. And you know what? I get to this point every year, and I start try to think back, what happened this year? And you remember highlights. You remember, oh, we took a vacation. Or remember, oh, this is when the child fell out of the tree and broke their arm, you know, whatever. But there's a lot of stuff that happens that is important, but it slips your mind. It gets buried under all the other stuff. Well, you know, let me ask you this, okay? You're a former girl, okay. And I understand girls always do this. Did you keep a diary when you were a girl?
Of course.
Yeah, did you?
Yes, of course. I don't think there are any girls that don't at some time or another.
For how long?
I have no idea, honey. Again, it was something that I didn't keep up for a long time. I'd start and stop at different times.
Mm-hmm.
I really wish I had. I think my problem is I'm a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to do it perfectly. I want to tell everything that happened, and it becomes a huge burden. Mm-hmm. You do it a little differently.
Well, I do. And I'm kind of inspired, but you had...
I'll keep talking.
Okay, here we go. No, I got it.
One of the things that has inspired me about your journaling, Hal, is the way that if you don't have time, you might just put down a few words to remind you of it later.
Yes.
And so it doesn't become a burden. If you're busy, you don't worry about it. You just put down three or four words that will remind you later what happened, you know?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things inspired me. One of the things, one of our family heirlooms is we've got a journal that was kept by, I had to count this up, my great, 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 great grandfather, okay, four greats, all the way back into the 1850s. He was a farmer, a plantation owner, whatever. I don't know how you characterize his piece of property, but he owned some land in South Carolina and grew corn and cotton and the typical stuff that grew there. Well, he kept a journal of happenings around his farmland, and it was just maybe a sentence or two a day. And a lot of it was, you know, hey, we planted this particular field, or we were harvesting this particular field, or it rained all day, so we shucked corn, or we made a trip into Camden to the market. You know, a lot of just kind of business notes. But then other days it was, my son was sick, or the pastor preached today on the sin which so easily entangles us. You have a note about the sermon or a note about a family visit or something. And it's just a treasure because you look back there and you can see in the handwriting of your ancestor just day-to-day life. And the other thing, and you mentioned this earlier, I'm a big fan of Ronald Reagan. And a couple of 3 years ago, an edition came out, an edited version of Reagan's diaries. And he was one of the only presidents, I think there were only five out of the whole series, who kept a daily diary the whole time he was in office. And the only days he missed were the days he was in the hospital recovering from a bullet wound.
Wow.
Okay. And then.
Okay. Now we all feel awful now. We all feel like complete slackers.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I read that and I thought, okay, if an elderly president of the United States can do this, surely I could. But you know what? I looked at his pattern. He wasn't writing an essay a day. He was writing a sentence, three sentences on a really long-winded day. He might write a paragraph. But
yeah.
Usually it was just a short little blurb. I met with a couple of people and after lunch, and in the evening we watched an old Greta Garbo film. Great time. You know, and it was just very brief.
You know, I love reading back through your journal.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when you leave it up on the computer and I'm walking by and I say, oh, you know, it gives me a window into what you're thinking. But, you know, I'd like to print it out and, like, save it for the family because it really is interesting to see just what God does on a day-to-day basis in our lives and to help us not to forget all those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, when you have as many flat tires as we have all across America, they tend to run together.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't remember whether this was a time outside Minneapolis or if this was a time outside Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have records, you remember it all.
Yeah.
You know, even, do you remember the flat tire outside Phoenix?
Yes, I do.
And we pulled into this little bitty town,
mm-hmm,
and got to the most fascinating place right before they closed.
Yeah.
Do you remember this place?
Yes, I do.
It had mesquite bushes, and there was, like, mannequins dressed like cowboys up on the roof. It was outrageous. Do you remember that?
It was funny. It was very providential because we were coming down this long grade. It was like Camp Verde grade, I think they called it, just north of Phoenix. It's a really evil stretch of mountainside. And we're coming, we're just humming down this road, and one of the tires on the trailer delaminated and just took that tread came off. It took the fender right off the trailer.
I just peeled back. And, you know, talk about providence. It was the only place where you could pull off on, like, that entire grade.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is like a long stretch of 7% grade or something.
Yeah, and we pulled off there. I mean, it was shocking to even see it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we change it, but we realize that the bolts are sheared. Yeah. One of the bolts is sheared.
Yeah, that was kind of a downside because we'd made that trip to Saskatoon with all the salt and stuff on the roads and didn't realize it was corroding up the bolts. So we actually managed to Hercules the lugs right out of the wheel. But we still had enough to hold the wheel on. So we said, well, let's nurse it down the hill and see if we can find somebody to replace those lugs. When we got into this little village down at the bottom of the hill, and we stopped at the gas station and asked, what can we do about this? And they said, oh, go talk. I don't even remember his name now. Go talk to Ted down the road. You just, you know, half a mile and turn to the left. And you're right. There's a mesquite tree, and there's like a junk dealer, and then there's this open air stall full of tires.
Yeah.
And Ted's, you know, this is semi-desert territory, so he doesn't need a roof.
Yeah, attached to the junk dealer.
Yeah.
And we pull up. He says, well, I'm about to close. We said, we really need some help. And I don't even think he said anything. He just went back and got his wrench and started whacking those bolts out. And,
yeah.
You know, and at that point, we'd have paid $200 to fix it. We were desperate.
I was braced, yeah.
Yeah. And he finishes up and stood up. And what did he say?
I just said, well, how much did that be? And he said, I guess about $5. I said, here, let me give you 20. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. He replaced two or three lugs there. I mean, he had to drive them out with a sledge and a punch, but he did the job for us. Lickety-split. I don't think we were there 15 minutes.
Yeah, he was able to close on time. He closed right at 5 o'clock as we were pulling out.
That's right.
Yeah, and when you see those things that maybe aren't earth-shaking, but you see God's providence, and, you know, this happened in the one place we could safely pull off. We pulled off at the right town with the one place that was open for 15 more minutes. You know, God's providence is remarkable. And I think if we didn't do this at New Year's, I wouldn't take the time to remember all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our meeting together in the next couple of days with our children.
Well, now, one of the things you do, which is kind of like this. Now, I sort of consider myself the family historian for that. And so that's one of the reasons I keep the journal, because there's a record of generally when somebody was sick, when we went to the doctor, when we took a trip, you know, we bought something or something sold or whatever. That's sort of our day book for the family. But now you do the same thing at Christmas time when you do the family photo album.
Yeah.
And you used to do it the hard way with the magnetic pages and the overlay sheets, but now you do something a little bit more high-tech.
Well, now I go to one of these photo book sites. And I take all our digital photos from us and from the children and, you know, our grown-up children, and I put them together into a photo book for us and have it professionally published,
yeah.
You know, for us and for our mothers. They love it. That's their favorite gift all year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just got our photo book. This year's is entitled A Life of Adventure.
Yeah.
And on the back is Pete, the Plaintiff Prairie Dog.
Yeah.
You know, we were traveling out west this year, and as we came through South Dakota and Wyoming, we just thoroughly enjoyed seeing the prairie dog town. Do you remember that, Hal?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was outside Devil's Tower, Wyoming.
It was.
I picked up in a gas station this little 4-inch toy prairie dog and just plopped him up on the dashboard.
Yeah.
He's been there ever since.
Yeah, that's kind of our mascot. We call him Pete the Plaintiff Prairie Dog.
Because he looks he looks like, where are we now?
Yeah. Yes, it's mildly reproachful. We don't put him facing out like a figurehead. We face the driver, you know, kind of this reproachful, this little conscience there. Well, you know, there's a couple things you can do. Now, I just, for my diary, I just keep a Word document. I just made a table and I put the date on one column and I put my notes on the column next to it. So there's some other things you could do. You know, if you've got a blog, you know, like a Blogspot site or something more elaborate, like a WordPress blog or something, you know, you might do something like that if you don't mind being a little more public about it. You can do something on Facebook to keep track. And, you know, the statuses can be, oh, I had a Danish for breakfast. It could be kind of trivial stuff, but you can do something a little more pointed.
Oh, please don't share what you had for breakfast.
No.
But, you know, one thing, though, I kind of like doing something more private because sometimes the biggest battles are not ones you can share with the public.
No, that's quite true.
And you've got to have some way to remember and document those.
You know, I love it when in the Passover ceremony, mm-hmm. the youngest child is supposed to ask, why are we doing this?
Yes.
And I think that gives us a pattern for remembering what God has done.
Yeah.
You know, that when we gather together as a family, that even little children should be asking, what has God done here? You know, what? Tell us a story, Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
As we tell that story, and then as we begin to brainstorm about the new year, to think of all the possibilities and to look for opportunities, you know, as a family, what is our family mission? Why does God have us here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does God want us to accomplish this year? Of course, we can't know. Why, you know, man proposes, God disposes. We mentioned that in the first segment.
Yeah.
We can make plans, and God can completely change them. It's happened to our family a lot.
Yeah.
But I think when we free ourselves up to brainstorm and think and pray together and consider the options and possibilities, really good things happen. For one thing, your children take ownership of what's happening. You know, that has been amazing to me, that as we have wrapped our children more into our family planning, and I'm not saying our children boss the family by any means,
right.
but they're allowed to have input.
Yeah.
You know, they suggest things, they come up with ideas and brainstorms, and you know, they say, I don't think this is working. They have to be respectful.
Yeah.
But as we wrap our children more up in our family and business planning, I think they've owned it more, Hal.
Yeah.
I think that they're more cooperative. They want to see our family accomplish those things, and they more.
They do.
I think they feel like, more like it's what they're trying to accomplish, not just what Mom and Dad are trying to accomplish.
That's right. Well, look, let's do let's take a couple minutes here and kind of wrap up. You know, we got a few things planned for the blog this week. We already mentioned our State of American Manhood. You can look for that this week on our blog, which is at www.raisingrealmen.com. And I think also we might have, tell me if you agree with this. Like I said, we're performing without a net. What about a post on one of the questions of courtship?
Oh, boy.
Well, we have
okay, if we have time.
If we have time.
If we have time this week, we'll do that. We also are coming up to, because, hey, I got my college boys home from school this week.
That's right.
Also, we're coming up to the new Boot Camp 9 to 12 and Marriage Retreat Online.
Ooh, that's right.
Okay, Boot Camp 9 to 12, it's our live web series.
Yes.
We're live. We're right there with you. Mm-hmm. You can ask questions while we're teaching. We'll discuss things with everybody that's there. It's fascinating. It's a lot of fun. Do you ever feel like your 9 to 12-year-old or 13-year-old has lost their mind?
Uh-huh.
I remember that when our oldest was 11,
yeah.
feeling like, man, I don't know what's going on, but I have failed.
Uh-huh.
He is not getting it.
Right.
You know, and that's not unusual. And in fact, the majority of questions we get are probably from people with kids in this age range.
Yeah.
So we put together a webinar series. It's like once a week in the evening for 5 weeks. And if you can't show up live, which is the most fun, we do record everything, like the video, chat, everything.
Right.
And you can watch it later on your own. And right now, I've still got the Christmas special up, so it's only $24 instead of $39.
Yeah.
That's a huge savings.
Okay.
And it starts Thursday evening, starting January 9th.
Okay.
So you go to raisingrealmen.com/bootcamp. Let's talk about Marriage Retreat Online.
That's right. And another thing, too, we have another webinar. This is a four-week series. We call it our Marriage Retreat Online because it's
good.
It's
the only marriage retreat that you don't have to hire a sitter for.
That is quite true. And, you know, it's really good to take just to set some time aside and say, I'm not going to read the blogs. I'm not going to check my email. I'm going to spend an hour or 2 hours just thinking about this relationship. And it's fun. It's interactive. You know, there's live video. There's live chat. We'll answer questions. We'll raise questions. And we've got all kinds of new content related to our new book.
Yes.
We've got things coming out related to My Beloved and My Friend.
Yes, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses.
That's right.
And the next session, Marriage Retreat Online, starts January 14th at 9 p.m., and there's a huge sale on that this week. It's only $20, which is the cheapest we have ever charged.
Oh, wow.
And so you need to run out there and grab it because I'm going to change it soon and put it back up to the regular price. So head out there. It's a great thing to, you know, maybe fix a special dinner for you and your husband after you put the kids to bed, or get them set up with a video if they're older,
mm-hmm.
or fix a special dessert and spend some time on your marriage.
Yeah.
We all need to do that. You and I need to do it, too.
Sure, we do, don't we? Yeah. Okay, and so we got about 60 seconds here to wrap up. We appreciate you being here and sharing part of your evening with us. And coming up in the next few weeks, we got some interesting programs. One of them is Luke Gilkerson from Covenant Eyes is going to come talk about Internet purity and keeping integrity while your family is online.
And for heaven's sakes, if you bought your family devices for Christmas, please don't miss the show. Next Monday night, 9 p.m., it's critical to your family's safety.
True. And another one we're going to do in the upcoming Super Bowl season, we're going to talk about Christians and sports and competition. Are they good? Are they not? And hopefully we're going to have Earl Pendleton as a special guest. Earl's an interesting man because one thing I thought homeschoolers could never do is do football. I mean, to get together five guys that can play basketball, I can see that. Can you find enough homeschoolers of size and inclination to play football to make even one team, let alone a squad? I mean, two teams to play each other? Well, Earl Pendleton put together a homeschool football league that's got over 800 students playing football year-round, all sorts of levels, flag, full contact, 11-man squads, 8-man squads. It's just an incredible program he's put together. And it's all homeschoolers, and it is God-honoring stuff. So that's going to be really neat. So watch out for that.
Yes, and so tune in next Monday night, 9 p.m., or check us out on the archives at Making Biblical Family Life Practical on theultimateradioshow.com.
That's right. So we appreciate you being with us here. Do hope that you'll join us again next Monday. Thank you so much. Until then, I'm Hal Young.
And I'm Melanie Young. Happy New Year, folks.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's H-A-L-A-N-D-M-E-L-A-N-I-E.com.
The moderator has left the conference.
M-E-L-A-N-I-E.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie. Or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.